thanks for joining us for another Experience Grind podcast, the show where we talk about movies, games, and other pop culture miscellany, along with how they've influenced and molded us. Tonight, we're talking about the latest movie from Sam Raimi, Send Help, starring Rachel McAdams and Dylan O'Brien. But before we get into that, I want to introduce my panel of co-hosts who are also just waiting for their time to make a move, flip the power dynamic, and probably end me. And you know what? I'm probably not going to put up much resistance when that day comes. I'll just be honest. First up, Brian, how are you doing?
I'm hanging in there, trying just to get as much heppel as I can.
Perfect. I've got a question for you. Okay. You're a survivor on a deserted island. Which coworker would you like to be stranded with?
Can it be none?
It can absolutely be none. I that is an answer. That's a resounding answer. All right.
I think that might be the one.
It's very telling. Next up, we have Kyle. How are you doing tonight, buddy?
I'm doing pretty great there, old one-take Ryan.
If editing is any part of the show, I am absolutely the one-take king. Hey, we'll see.
Nailed it.
First try.
I have a separate question for you.
Yeah.
Who is a Nepo baby that you would love to old... Not ultimate. Utterly. Who is a Nepo baby you would love to utterly dominate?
Oh my god. Like,
sexually?
More in the power dynamic kind of way because of the send help kind of thing, but...
Like the movie!
Because the lead character is a Nepo baby who gets dominated... Probably, who is one that you would like to do that to?
Ben Stiller.
Whoa, that's an interesting take. Why?
He's very well established, and if I could come in and dominate, I very easily just walk into the upper echelons of Hollywood. I'd be hanging out with Larry David, everybody.
Okay. That's how that works, man.
I see it.
Okay. Prison Plus, strategic Ben Stiller's move. I
pretty
love
cool
it.
Guy. Like, I'd like to hang out with him.
And smart.
Even if I have to force myself to hang out with him. So.
That's good. All right. And last and not least, we have Sean. How are you doing tonight, sir?
I'm currently trying to figure out how much octopus it would take to paralyze you to play with your ball or cut your ball off. What's up, man? How about you?
Whoa. Now, I had a question for you, but it might be a different question now. Okay. One, who do you know that has octopus?
I feel like if I go to an international market, which everybody, if you listen to this upcoming Patreon, you'll know that you should, I can probably find some.
All right. I'm going to get roofied by international market octopus. Great. Fantastic.
Wow, you make that sound really rude.
Rude feed.
It's not like a lemon squirt on your lobster nuggets.
Lemon squirt squirts. I'm going...
Squirt squirts.
I've got another question for you, Sean.
Shit. All right, sick. Do it.
I think yours actually be the most like straightforward and reasonable of all of these. What's the best plane crash in a movie or TV show?
Oh, man. Well, it's so messed up that my mind immediately went to something that I couldn't say.
What?
Oh, I think you know.
Sir, they've hit the second tower.
Oh, no. Brian, that's super fucked up, man.
That was my Sean impression.
You know that scene in Independence Day where the alien ship comes down? Duh. Man. Okay. But the first one that popped into my head is Castaway, because without that FedEx plane going down, there's no way we would have been introduced to Wilson, and the world would have missed out on a very friendly volleyball. And I feel like that is the worst timeline. So I'm glad that that motherfucking plane went down. Thanks for taking one for the team. Find that black box.
Thanks, Tom.
I wish this was not a audio format, because you got to do the up to the air for Wilson.
The baseball shit, like tap the chest.
Is it the Sammy Sosa?
Yeah, something like up that. Yeah, air. I don't know. I don't know baseball, but
I don't know much, but I think that's something.
but all I right. think that's a thing.
So, as I said up at the top, we are talking about Send Help, Sam Raimi's most recent movie. First off, before we get into any of this, I want to know if any of you have seen this movie, or have you even heard about this movie? I'm going to start with Sean, because I do think I know where you've landed.
When this was in theaters, I was torn between going to see this and going to see Iron Lung. And let me tell you, I made the wrong decision, because the first time I saw this was at home a couple of weeks later. Yeah.
That's a good reversal. You got me.
Yeah.
Okay, so quick aside, Iron Lung, not great.
Yeah, I don't know. Okay, so here's the thing. When I go and I say, oh, it's not a good movie, I guarantee you, before this point right now, there is somebody listening that went, yeah, but like, you just got to know the lore, man. Like, you have to have watched all 40 videos on this, like, or played the video game, something like that. Yeah. I don't know. I guess it's based on a game. But every single defense to this is either that or, well, it was Markiplier's passion project. And I'm like, I don't give a fuck. Like, it was
visually, passion sucks.
Yeah. Like, it was visually very impressive for, like, his first outing. But that movie makes no fucking sense at all.
Oh, interesting. So.
But okay. It was, I mean, it wasn't bad. Like, I didn't want to walk out of it. And I spent the whole time being like, man, I can't wait for this to make sense. Like, this is really interesting. I can't wait. And somebody out there is like, oh, he's just a dumbass and can't figure out the little messages. I don't care.
I don't care.
I don't care.
I think that's a perfectly good takeaway. Good to know. I have heard very mixed things about that one, so.
Sick. I wish I have met more of the people that don't like it.
Well, I'm glad you're one of them, and I'm curious to get more into your thoughts on Send Help in a bit. But first, Brian, are you familiar with this movie? Have you seen it?
I had not seen it, but Hulu, since it came to Hulu, they've been really advertising it. Like, hey, you got to watch this. You got to watch this. I don't even have Hulu with ads, so I don't know why I'm seeing these ads. But here we are. Hulu's been pushing it pretty hard, so I've been familiar with the concept. Didn't realize it was Raimi until I started watching it, though.
That's a good distinction, and I guess I should ask Sean, too. When you went to see this, what was the draw for seeing this? Was it just like, yeah, you saw the trailer and thought it looked good? Did you know it was a Sam Raimi movie and you like Sam Raimi?
Honestly, for me, I don't watch trailers going into stuff. So, like, okay. I guess this has come up in the past. Like, Kyle and I did In Bruges, like, a year or two ago. And it's one of those just based off of name. Like, I never would have seen that. I probably would have if I saw the trailer. But this, I think, gets me a lot in that either I only ever really hear the name of it. And sometimes I'll take a peek and see who directed. But I think this is one of those where it's like Sam Raimi's new flick. And I'm like, ah, let me click on that. And just read a quick synopsis, a two-sentence thing of what the movie was. I'm like, yep, sign me the fuck up kind of thing.
Nice. Okay, perfect. All right, so you went in kind of a little bit more on the Sam Raimi name. That's what drew you in. Interesting. I didn't know you were trailer averse. That's really cool. I wish I had the resistance. Or the ability to resist. Going back to you, Brian, you did not know it was a Sam Raimi movie after being blasted with a bunch of Hulu ads. Did the Sam Raimi name, was that a pull for you? Was that now like
it would have been? I think, I probably would have seen it sooner if I had known it was Raimi.
Okay. All right. Interesting. Okay. So, Sam Raimi fan. Kyle, I'm pretty sure you're a Sam Raimi fan, but fill me in on all your Sam Raimi experience, and then also, like, your experience with this movie, too. Did you know about this? Did you see it? All of that.
Big Sam Raimi fan, of course. Seen almost everything, but don't love almost everything. Have heard of this. Did want to see it when I knew it was Raimi. Raimi would be the only reason I would have watched this. This was my first time watching it.
All right. And for a quick summary, I think I'm right there with Kyle. I think almost verbatim. Everything he said is same for me. Was really excited. This is another kind of recommendation from Micah that it was like, oh, cool recommendation. I was going to watch this one anyway, dude. Haha. So it worked out. I love Sam Raimi and wanted to watch this one. And so we did it. Thank you for watching it with us. Now we're going to break this sucker down. First, we're going to hop into the story, which is going to cover the narrative, dialogue, and writing. But first, I'm going to give a quick summary. After a plane crash leaves an overlooked corporate analyst, Linda Little, and her arrogant boss and nepo baby, Bradley Preston, stranded on a remote island, the two are forced to work together to survive as their toxic workplace dynamic flips and turns increasingly dangerous. What begins as a darkly comedic survival story quickly spirals into a battle over power and control. That is essentially the movie. We can get into spoilers here, but ultimately, we're just going to break this thing down. I want to hear what Brian thought of this story first.
Had to be me, didn't it? Okay.
Had to be.
This story. Man, I'm still digesting this one. This is a tough one for me because there's something about it that I really dislike, and I'm trying to figure out what it is.
It's the fact that you're a man.
Nope, that's not it.
Brian, key him over here.
I think the story is actually probably going to be my lowest bit of the evening. Just forewarning, I guess, or spoiler alert, I don't know. The story, I think, it starts off in a way that you're like, cool, I know what this is. And then it gets twisty, and then it gets twisty again. And then they're going back to earlier in the movie to make that twisty too. And it's like, oh, okay, but I don't know. I think, okay. I'm gonna start some spoilers. Let's start some spoilers.
Let us in.
I feel like when Zuri, the fiance of the Nepo baby boss, shows up on the island after the search has been called off and finds them, and she goes crazy, is a little unnecessary. I think you could have really leaned instead on the other twist of the mansion. I don't think you needed both, and I think it does a disservice to the story. I don't know. There's so much I like about this, and there's something nagging at me that I don't like, and I think it's in the story somewhere. So overall, though, I don't think it's bad. I just think maybe it's a little conflated or it gets in its own way. I'm going to go with a 3. And then I think I'm going to send it to Sean.
Man, I am. This is out of 5.
Yeah,
I don't know. I don't know why I never remember this. I'm actually like on the opposite end of this. And folks, listeners, this movie, this story is fucking wild. This is fucking crazy. I actually wish that they were less on the mansion and more on everything that happened with the fiance, because everything from that point forward is just fucking, it was already off the rails, but then it's off the freaking rails. And I wish that they went a little bit more into that, and not even necessarily for a longer amount of time, but kind of stayed in that instead of finding the mansion, because it would have, the mansion was the thing that I expected in a sense. Like the entire movie, I thought what was on the other side of the trees, on the other side of the mountain, was actually like a small village or something. And the port goes out that way. So that's why there's really no merchant ships going, you know, however it's situated, it could be actually a habited island. So showing the mansion was, it's kind of something that I expected. So not having that there, I feel like would have overall played out a little bit better for me. I do remember like when the movie ended, just kind of feeling, I don't know, I felt gross. Like this movie is, I don't know, it did a lot. It took days for me to digest this movie. And even now looking back, it's like I appreciate it more now than I did when it ended. And with that, I'm going to give it a 4 just because we didn't even really touch into the nitty gritty of the story on it. We mainly talked about the end. And I feel like these two other guys may get into more of the story, but I'm going to go with a 4 and send it to Kyle.
Kyle's giving a look of consternation right now.
It looked like he was pooping.
I was trying to sound like the Thwomps from Mario.
It's like too bassy or too low that it's like not coming through. It'll probably be there.
Count bassy.
The audio.
The listeners will hear it. It's a really good impression. They're going to be like, damn, that was actually spot on. Anyways, I'm with Brian on this one, man. And even a little lower. I think the story is very base. And bloated, way too bloated. Number one mistake, complaint, of course. And we'll get into that later, but goddamn, 30 minutes could have been cut the fuck out of this movie. Nobody would have cared. Didn't like the first reveal early that there were inhabitants that she saw. I feel that gave up the ghost way too soon. Didn't like that. And so really most of my complaints are with the story. It doesn't do anything new that I could really point out, and that's why I'm saying it was all around sort of basic and kind of boring too. Like, I don't know, it's maybe hard to do, but I feel like I've seen the desert survival scenario kind of worn out, and maybe that's me being blasé, but I was overall very unimpressed with the story of the movie, if I'm being completely honest. I identified with Homegirl at the start and all of that, and I think even to a degree on the desert, but that quickly goes all the way out the window. She becomes very much unredeemable, which I feel is a nice turn for the story overall, but I do feel it's also kind of maybe there the whole time, too. On the other hand, I did like the sort of quick cut ending to the happiness. That's maybe one of the things I did like the most, where it ends with the golf swing and then we cut to an actual golf swing in the bright sunny daylight.
That's not really story, like that. Dog. That's style.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I know. but it's the ending of the story, and I'm giving it this so that I'm not in the deep darks of the one, because I'm giving it a 2.
Damn.
And I'm kicking it to Ryan.
You don't have
out.
A choice. I'm going to take it. That's crazy, though. All right, so we've got 2, 3, and 4. A really nice spread here. I'm going to talk through mine, and I'll save where I'm at till the end. I think mostly everything here, writing-wise, feels fine. I agree with Kyle. It's a bit long in the tooth. I also feel like there's easily 20 minutes that could be shaved from this. I think there are subplots that don't really work or pan out, that don't add to it. One of my biggest criticisms with the story is that it takes Bradley way too many times to figure out, like, the power dynamic has been flipped. Like, we need to teach this person a lesson.
He's an idiot.
Three or four times. It's like, how do you not get it? Like, she outpaces you here in every fucking sense. And like, if that's the commentary, like, again, three or four times, like, I got it after like the first or second time. We don't need to keep hitting it on the nose. And honestly, in the storytelling, right there with Kyle, again, like, I feel like a lot of this is really played out or foretold in a way, like, if this is a thriller, none of this was really surprising to me. None of this was, like, I would argue and say this is not very twisty at all. Everything was very kind of predictable and kind of as expected as it went along until the end, which maybe is like, is she going to live or not? And like, this is maybe the only question I had towards the end, at which point, like, it doesn't really matter because like, you've seen how equally bad all the characters can be at a certain point. So like, I don't really care at a certain point too. And story ultimately wraps down to the writing team. Sam Raimi is not part of the writing team, so I don't feel bad being negative here. The writers are Mark Swift and Damian Shannon, and their credits are Freddy vs. Jason, the Friday the 13th reboot with Jackie Earle Haley, and the Rock Baywatch movie. That's it. They have not written any other movies, and you can tell. I started this thinking I was going to be like a 3, maybe, and be positive on it. But the more I talk, the more I get negative. And then I'm like, talking about like the desert island burnout, like more so, like we just did Triangle of Sadness. Triangle of Sadness was like 2 years ago, which is like an Oscar winning fucking movie that talks about like a cruise ship fucking going down with a bunch of rich elites onto an island that then the poor suddenly become like the ones who have the skills and survival with it, with no, and like they take control and see, like, this story has been done. And like, I've said this is like Castaway meets Misery, in which case, like, again, you want to point to either of those movies and you're like, 20-year-old movie versus 30-plus-year-old movie. So like, these are well-worn tropes at this point too. Like, nothing here feels fresh or new. And then like, the ending that smash cut that Kyle pointed out, great, love it. That's style, and that's why style's gonna get some points. It doesn't get story points because like, the ending, it feels, I'm really glad it stuck with Sean, and I'm really curious to hear like more why it stuck with
Sean. Pump the brakes on that. I was gonna save this till you're done, but like, Brian, can you knock me down to a 3? So now back to you, Ryan.
Sorry, but I don't mean to like dissuade you. I'm interested in why it stuck with you. Because I go back to Sam Raimi movies and Drag Me to Hell, and that ending,
I want God to talk damn, about Drag Me to Hell so much.
It's it such fucked a great me one. Up. And I really, like, I could not, like, get that ending out of my head, and it just stuck with me and stuck with me but for, hey, like, weeks and weeks
Sam
and weeks.
Sam Raimi wrote that one.
You can tell. Mm-hmm. Here, this ending is, like, kind of funny and quirky, and, like, it's like, haha, okay, cool. I get it. That's funny. And that's it. And then I was done. And then I'm probably not going to think of this anymore. I don't know. I am probably more negative on the story. I'm going to be a 2. I'm going to be a 2.
Welcome,
can you
buddy.
Send it back to Sean? Yeah.
Sean.
Uh-huh. Sean. So actually, the more that we talk about it and the more that you guys brought up, the ending is the thing that I actually disliked the most of this movie. And because it was so incredibly on the nose on how the ending was just, it was a visual representation of an aside that she made at the very beginning of the movie. And it made me roll my eyes so fucking hard. And that is something that I have blocked out since watching that movie. And I'm going down to a 2.
Because holy shit.
I enjoyed so much of the shit that happened on the island. It's funny, I only talked about the mansion and my thoughts on the city or whatever, but actually talking about the story and everything. I enjoyed the stuff that was on the deserted island. I wanted to see more fucked up stuff happen. But there gets to a point where that ending just kind of, just thinking about the ending, I'm like, oh, that's why I felt gross, because I felt like I just got kicked in the nuts as the ending.
I did hate her look to the camera as she drives over CGI highway.
That was the most infuriating.
That part did suck, and it did leave me with such a bad taste. I was like, God damn it, really?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And she's just gonna...
Yeah. Yeah, as opposed to Justin Long looking down at the camera as he lost the love of his life, he's just fucking crying, and then, like, roll credits, boom, done, and then, like, big swelling... Drag Me to Hell credits. Great. That's, if you've not seen Drag Me to Hell, that's how it ends.
It's an awesome movie.
What did I get ripped apart for ruining? Prestige? The Prestige. And you just picked a movie from, like, even more recent?
Who pulled you apart for ruining The Prestige? Because
all of you. I'm going to put all of you in that box.
How dare you?
I'm sure it was Kyle, the most of all of us, now that he asked, who did that? Who was that person?
I'm sure it's literally only someone being like, spoilers.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of me giving that much of a shit, because who hasn't seen The Prestige, and who doesn't know the twist?
It's been 10 years. You don't get to complain.
It's been almost 20 years on that movie.
Yeah. No, no, I'm saying movie's been 10 years old, it doesn't matter. You don't get to complain anymore. At no point, there's no circumstance.
You had your chance.
Yep. That gives you, like, you were in a coma for, like, several years. Like, that
could
gives
have given
you
me a
so
heads up you're
going
to talk about it. No, be ready to leave the room. You ain't seen fucking Dune. I say, you know that part in Dune? That means get the fuck out of the room.
Dude. All right, it's 2026, so we should ruin a movie from 2016
every
podcast, every week. Yes.
Okay. That's actually
so. You start with characters, and I'll find one from 2016 and ruin it.
All right, Kyle, you're up first. I'm going to start with characters. You know what? I just finished up in talk, so I don't want to do that again. Let's hear from Sean.
In characters?
Mm-hmm.
Man, I really enjoy how, like, every single character in here, sure, I'm sure there are people that are like this, but every character was just such a caricature of that personality type. Like, it is taking some, you know, you have your Nepo baby, picture one in your head, folks. And if you haven't seen this, go watch it. It's on Hulu. They advertise it all the time. even if you don't have ads,
I don't know how
but
they got me.
Think of that and then turn it to 12. Like, that's that person, you know. It's I enjoyed the dynamic between the two of them. I even enjoyed the characters. Like, I loved the caricature of it, because it just made everything seem so ridiculous. Like, this movie's very ridiculous, and that's okay to me, because at no point does it not feel ridiculous, you know? So I think they casted this movie great. I thought everybody was really awesome in what they did and with what they had to work with. I think Linda got a bit much, but also in her shoes, I think that's the point. Yeah, I don't know. I'm going to go with a 4 on this, and I'm going to stick with that no matter how much you guys poo-poo on this. I'm not going to reconsider until I do. And I'm going to send it to Ryan, because he didn't want to talk anymore.
I appreciate that, buddy.
You're welcome.
I'm not going to talk you down. I'm right there with you. I'm at a 4. I'm at a 4 as well. I agree. They are right on the verge of caricatures. But... Who boy do Rachel McAdams and Dylan O'Brien know how to act and know exactly the movie that they're in? Rachel McAdams alone, just like she gets, if the characters are a little thin and I have issues with the characters, and I do, especially Linda's character by the end, I will elaborate, Sean, because I agree with you. Like, by the end, shit gets wonky with her and it's not quite right.
Yep.
Rachel McAdams in her performance and Dylan O'Brien's performance alone get that extra point for me, because it's the way she like makes herself real small in the beginning of the movie and like hunches and cowers and kind of like does these little small movements. Again, it's like, it's the fucking acting things that like a lot of people don't notice, but like your brain fucking notices, to quote like Red Letter Media. Like, it's there and like you get it, and like it's why it's so good. And Dylan O'Brien does it too. Dylan O'Brien's great. I think Dylan O'Brien's like another, like, he's got like this Adrian Brody energy, and I'm here for it. It works. I think he can be as charming as he can be like nasty and shitty. And he can do them both very well, just like Adrian Brody. And it's weird that my last choice was Ready or Not, with Adrian Brody doing a very similar role. But I think the characters, as I said, a little bit caricaturous, but like Linda at the end, it is a bit of a bummer that she still gets like
Brody.
Adam Brody, I'm sorry. The cooler
you were throwing
Brody.
Me. I was like,
because Adrian Brody.
I was confused
cool.
too. I was like,
that fucking
did I see Adrian Brody recently.
Fucking nerd. No, Adam Brody. Adam Brody.
Yeah, there we go.
Sorry.
Back on track.
Get out here with the piano and that shit. Like trying to feel things. No. I think, holy fuck, where I was going. At the end, I think it's a bit of a bummer that Linda still gets like kind of like love obsessed with Bradley, even after like she confesses to killing his fiance, and like you still think you're gonna have a chance. So like when like they're in this big fight and he's able to like get one up on her momentarily by like pretending to be into her, like all of this stuff, this fantasy love interest between the two of them, it never really clicked for me. And this is like the shit that could like easily be excised to like cut 20 minutes out of this movie, and I think make it like a cleaner, like leaner, more effective movie. So yeah, there's some character shit at the end. I don't think they're quite as clean as they could be, and as I've seen Sam Raimi do in the past when he actually has a writing credit. But the acting and the casting, like this is a two-man job, essentially. There are two people lifting this movie, and I think they're both super equipped and up to the job. So that's why I'm like more positive on this. So I'm gonna go four. Stop rambling. I'm sorry, y'all.
Never apologize. Never surrender.
Kyle, what are your thoughts on characters?
Yeah.
And then if you want to ruin a movie, feel free to whenever you want.
That's coming up first. So in the 2016 movie Arrival, it turns out that they are not experiencing time literally. And her daughter is
actually
had cancer the entire time, and she knows she's going to die, and she can't stop it from happening. Yet she chooses to continue to live it out because the experience is worth it. Anyways.
That's a great first one to start with.
Wow.
Well done.
Shit. If there was a movie from 2016 that I would say is off limits for spoiling, it would have been Arrival.
But it's TV, didn't it? Yeah. It was my favorite, and of course
like,
I'm going to go there first.
That's a fucking movie that if you haven't seen it yet, you are missing out.
That's the best thing you've done on this podcast yet, Kyle.
Wow.
You can hang up your hat now.
Holy shit.
All right, so characters.
I just appreciate his joy while doing it.
I agree with you, Ryan. This is a two-person show. I disagree with you that it's an equal performance.
Mm. That's fair.
Rachel McAdams is in this movie because our boy really liked working with her on his last movie, Sam Raimi. Enjoyed her so much, he was like, I'll do it if I can have Rachel McAdams. So he's like, this essentially got made because he liked working with her. And I see why. I think he gets a fucking awesome performance out of her. If it does go a bit long in the tooth. I don't think it's her best work, though. Even in this character, I think the best part she does is the beginning part when she's smaller and meek and she's actually doing character things. Then she becomes Survivor Man. It's nothing really unique. She just gets cockier. And I've seen Rachel McAdams play cockier way better than this for some reason. doesn't really meet the levels that I feel she should in this power dynamic. And other side of the coin, I did not like Dylan O'Brien really at all. I didn't think he was, I felt he was, like you said, stupid for not realizing this like way long ago. And just, I didn't find much nuance in the performance. It was always just whiny brat. I thought he was good, but like at that, I didn't really have a lot of enjoyment or see much beyond like the one level. So on mine, for the two, I'm going to give Rachel a 4 and Dylan a 2, and it's going to average me out to a 3 for the score. And I'm going to pass it to Brian.
Okay. Okay. It's very interesting. I don't know if I agree with you. So let's get into that, I guess.
I did like that part. That was his best part.
I agree. I agree. We have a movie of two here. And goddamn, Rachel McAdams and Dylan O'Brien are pulling their weight. And there's a lot of weight because this whole movie is resting on just these two. And Rachel McAdams, fantastic. It's been said over and over. There's a scene here where Dylan O'Brien is playing a man who is Nepo baby, narcissist, coddled individual who is actively manipulating somebody who has bested him for, at this point, I think it's months. And he's pretending to be in love with her to a point where she's starting to get teary-eyed while they're in the midst of just trying to murder each other. And the way, and it's believable in a way that you can, in the performance, you can see that, like, okay, he's not being authentic here. But he is doing such a good job of making it seem believable as the character. I don't know if what I'm saying is coming through the right way, but like,
like it's him just impressive. Trying to, yeah. Cause, like, that's how you his tell character this is, would be doing this.
Yeah, he's very narcissistic, and now he's trying to do the manipulation move, and he's doing it very well because of what his character is. And there's just so much, I don't want to say nuance because it's what Kyle said there was none of, but I feel like it's a very nuanced performance, especially in that scene. And I think a lot of the character choices, as far as him being coddled and needing to be babied, comes to writing again, and also the problems I have with the Linda Little character are also based in the writing. I feel like this was two white men writing what they think a woman would do when she finally had the power in this situation, and they're like, oh, well, obviously she would become exactly what the man would have been like. And I don't think that's, I think that's disingenuous. I don't know. So what I'm going to say is, I think the characters are good. They're multifaceted, while also being extreme levels of what they are. They're caricatures, but they're nuanced, deep characters. We get backstory for both of them in their night of toilet wine confessions. And it's, I like these characters until the writing isn't consistent for them. So what I think I'm going to do is, I think I'm going to go 4 for characters and lower my story down to 2.
Welcome, boys. Right. Welcome.
This is like the most adjusting of scores ever. I'm fucking.
This is also. Does anybody have like a? We've all been on the same wavelength in a long time.
Do we have a favorite bit or line from any of the characters before we move on? Because I have one I'd like to just point out. I really like at the end when like they're in the mansion and she's taunting him and she's like, "A fucking knife washed up on the beach." You idiot! Are you fucking stupid?
It's really funny because, like, she says that, and thinking back to when you first see the knife, have that thought of like a knife just washed up on the beach. What? I love it when they say something that touches upon exactly what I thought. Yeah.
That was mine. Anybody got any others?
I don't know if I have a favorite line specifically, no.
I love when he tried to write his big help sign and he spelled it wrong.
Heppel?
And she just immediately called him out like, oh, Heppel?
Oh, that's so good.
Oh, I did like when she came back from murdering the boar and she was like, I think I like hunting now.
That scene was so AI and so gross.
Yes, which I think we now have all of our characters in. So we're going to get into style where we can talk about this grossness. Sean, I want to hear all about your grossness and all about all of this. Style Man. Will be tone, visual, sound, and music.
Man, I think I am just a sucker for a whole desert island aesthetic and theming of a movie. I'm just like, I love everything about that. I thought it was great. I thought there was a lot of really awesome shots. There's just something about when CGI just looks bad that like I absolutely remember the boar scene and just thinking, wow, that there's parts of this that just look so, it's taken me out of it. You know, when you have that, but then later when she scalps the dude or when her hair gets ripped off, she gets scalped and like how good that looks. It's like it's kind of all over the place when it comes to the effects of anything that was kind of gross in here. But genre, style, stuff that's really the only thing that I would knock this for. In this category. So I'm still gonna, I'll go a 4 on this and send it to Brian.
I am loving the style in this thing. There's so much Sam Raimi all over this, but more importantly, there's so much Bill fucking Pope all over this. Cinematographer Bill Pope, amazing. There are things going on here that just, oh, chef's kiss. There are scenes that I'm just like, God damn, that's Sam Raimi. I think leading up to that boar, the bad part of the boar scene, you get one of my favorite Raimi tropes of the low camera POV of the whatever is being chased or chasing. And I'm like, ah, God damn it, Sam Raimi. And then, yeah, I think the reason that this boar becomes so uncanny is because Sam Raimi likes to stay in moments a little bit too long to make them more uncomfortable. And this is a prime example of that, of him just being like, okay, yeah, let's just keep this boar on the screen for as long as we can, which is where you start to run into issues with realism and maintaining a CGI presence and making it look believable. And kudos, they could have made this a nighttime scene and hidden this, and they didn't. They kept this movie just well lit and gorgeous, despite how dark it gets at times. And like at the nighttime scenes, by contrast, are usually the more emotional development of the characters, which is flip-flop from what you would expect in this kind of movie. I think it's very interesting. I felt like it might have been a little bit more gory than it needed to be. But at the same time, I know that it's kind of, it's a director trait, but also a staple of the thriller genre. This is almost bordering on like splatter stuff. I think I'm out a solid 4 here. The gore didn't take me out of it enough to not appreciate what I was seeing. And then I'll send it to Kyle.
If you like Sam Raimi, I would highly recommend you watch the two-part RLM ranking of every Sam Raimi movie. It's a fantastic little catch-up piece. But one thing that they mentioned there, which I fully agree with, there's two Sam Raimis. You have Sam Raimi, the auteur, the visionary, and you have Sam Raimi, the director. I'm putting this in the second category, because for me, I don't see a lot of Sam Raimi style at all. I wrote, there's only like five things that I saw, and two of them are gimmies, so really three. You got the Delta 88 at the start in the parking garage. Mm-hmm. You got Bruce Campbell as the dead dad, who's seen as a painting. Then you've got the low FPV shot that Brian mentioned, which is a staple in all Sam Raimi flicks, which represents the boar here, which is the second one. This is a very Raimi-esque boar. There are times when it's attacking that it looks straight up like a deadite. The thing that does suck yeah. is that it is fully CG, and it does look like crap, and it's in that uncanny valley. I would have loved to see this as a fucking puppet blowing that snot out at her. And yeah. having the fucking crazy deadite eyes. Because it does look like a deadite at times. Like, the eyes are literally selling the craziness of this boar when it's coming at her. The other one that I have is the eyeball scene. When it's, like, popping over when he's pushing his thumb into her eyeball. Super Raimi-fied. Yeah.
There's That's other really Raimis about too. It. There's other Raimi what? Scenes. Like the, and all right, so when she's got the tuna on her lip and you have like the whip pan to his like eye real close up.
Sure.
And then yes. to her lip back okay. and forth. Like there are Raimi-isms.
The golf shot at the end of the movie that you referenced earlier is a Raimi yep. shot.
And that's a very big Raimi.
The fiance on the cliffside and the Dutch angle as it's turning is very Raimi. Like there's a lot. And I've got some more Raimi things that I'm going to speak cool. in my turn that I think are not
but
good Raimi.
Even still with a lot of, this still didn't feel like a Raimi movie. Because like you mentioned those and I remember them, but like these were the ones that like popped out to me that just came to me here and those didn't. So I would recognize them in the moment, but they didn't impact me in that way. Not saying that they diminish it, but I still wouldn't count those to add it up to a full. There's that still that feel, that discrepancy that I don't have it here. I'm not fully shitting on it. And I do think the cinematography is great, like you said, but that is still intercutting with it. It's almost like two different people sometimes behind the camera. Cause we do have the great shots and then we have some of these Raimi-isms and it's just, I don't want to say disjointed because it works and flows well and all of that's great. But overall, I think I'm just pretty middling on the style, which is weird, but I'm on a solid three. So I want to see Ryan take it.
I apologize for hopping in while you were talking, but I think it's also to set up a launching point for kind of where I am because I mostly agree with you, but there is like a little distinction that I think there are a lot of Raimi-isms that pop up through the movie, but the weird thing is like, it's like a heart monitor where it's like the movie rides this line and then there's a Raimi moment and then it rides a line and then a Raimi moment and then a Raimi moment. But like, again, I hate to just like keep throwing it back to like drag me to hell. But like, I feel like this is very closely thematically tied to Drag Me to Hell. It is an underlooked and undercounted female protagonist who gets put through the ringer emotionally, physically, all this stuff, and then comes through either for better or for worse. Like, it feels so close. But then I go back to Drag Me to Hell, and what it is doing, it does at such a more frequent clip where it's like, I don't disagree with Kyle. I don't think there are enough Raimi-isms for this to feel fully Raimi. Drag Me to Hell, like, every scene felt like it was a scene that came mm-hmm. from fucking Raimi. And this movie doesn't. This movie feels like it's a scene. And, like, it's, I agree, beautifully shot, beautifully framed. And the editing's really sharp, too. But then you're just waiting for Raimi moments. And even then, like, I think there are a few too many Raimi moments or Raimi moments that are pushed in that don't feel natural. Like, the ghost jump scare on the beach with Rachel McAdams. That,
she was a deadite too.
Yeah. That's like a fucking groan worthy moment for me. Mm-hmm. I was like, this is bad. And going to what Sean said earlier about like the CG taking you out of it, and specifically real bad CG making your movie look cheap, like sometimes you can lean into it and make it work, and like y'all are pulling up the boar, and like the boar is not great. I don't disagree, but like the spider shot when like they both go into the cave pulls into like in like the foreground spider. I'm like, why do we need this cheap looking fucking Photoshop spider? This scene would have worked without the spider. There's no reason for this. Or like, why do we need a close-up of a fucking millipede on a branch? Like, there's just like these little thoughts and ideas. I'm like, cool, you could have spent this money elsewhere and like it would have looked better. And like I thought I was coming in with style much higher, but I think I'm going to be lower too, because I also remember that sound and music's part of it, and Danny Elfman made the score. And do you remember anything from this fucking movie?
I remember that's something I wanted to bring up. This sounds like a Danny Elfman soundtrack, but nothing that... It's no, this is Halloween, or...
It just kind of blends in. It's all exactly fine. So I think I'm right with Kyle. I think I'm a 3.
Yeah, damn. This is a definitely a disappointing Elfman appearance.
Yeah, yeah. I saw his name at the beginning. I did mean to make a note of that. So hyped, and then I was like, "Oh damn!" I even said to Laura, "I was like, we're in for a good time. It's Elfman. Ooh, we got some good music." And then I was like, "Oh,
right."
I fucking put both feet in my mouth. Oh no!
Instead of going, right. "Oh damn," you should. You that ended makes up you want with, to lower oh, mine to a Dan. Three.
Dang, all right, so we are still weirdly mostly on sync here. Let's see if direction breaks this up. This is going to be the vision and execution of the director, Sam Raimi, who, if you didn't get it by this point, directed this movie. Does anybody have a strong desire to start? Last time I saw Kyle put his hand up at the last moment before calling out Sean, and I feel bad. So if anybody wants to start.
I can start with... I'll go with a 3 on this. I don't think it is overly... I don't think it's offensive or great in either direction. I've already talked about my displeasure in kind of where it goes, and at times I don't think that the movie, like, at looking back, it doesn't feel like the movie knows where it's going at sometimes, mm-hmm. at some points, and I think looking back that's a problem, and that you know when you can tell that the director didn't write the movie, this is one of those times, and you know, did what he did with what he was given, I guess. I think it looks great. The characters, I enjoyed the characters. I enjoyed what I saw on my screen for the most part. But in terms of really putting it together and getting me a final cut of this, I don't know. I'm not super thrilled, but I'm also not like, wow. Is this a first time... director here? So I feel like 3 feels pretty fine for me, and I'll send it to Kyle.
Perfectly said, Sean. I can't really argue. I had one thing I was going to interject and say, but it's an okay Raimi movie. I don't hate the movie, so you know, I can't go below the average, and I think it did fine. So I'm also at a 3. Ryan.
I think it's good that you brought up the Red Letter Media kind of ranking of all Sam Raimi, especially after we come off of Pizza Movie, because it is one thing to talk about like a movie from a pair of director or director who has done one thing. It mm-hmm. is very different when you then compare something from somebody who has a catalog of movies that you're very attached to. And so... Whereas last week I was very impressed because that was their first time. I have seen Sam Raimi do so much now. And I will say, like, if we're just going to talk about, like, putting up all of his movies. This is probably bottom half for me.
I'd say, yeah.
Not like much lower than like the halfway point, but this is in the bottom half. I think Sam Raimi's done better. Drag Me to Hell, I keep saying, like, if you're interested in this movie and you've not seen Drag Me to Hell, just go watch Drag Me to Hell instead. That, I think, does everything this movie wants to do, but does it better. I'm not even mentioning, like, all right, Evil Dead 2, Army of Darkness, Darkman, The Quick and the Dead, A Simple Plan, The Gift, The Spider-Man, Spider-Man 2, even fucking Doctor Strange, Multiverse of Madness, I enjoyed more than this. Like, for that, like, I just, like, I don't know. And then I go to say, like, I feel almost like there's either not enough Raimi in this movie or, like, too much Raimi. I think there's a weird mix, and maybe this is, like, that writer-director disconnect because he didn't have a finger in, like, the writing of it all. I don't know. I think Raimi is a bit at odds here. I will not say I did not have fun and I did not chuckle frequently throughout this movie. But it's not, I wouldn't say it's not one of his better movies. So I think I'm a three. I'm a three. So Brian, take us home.
I agree with what everybody's saying. There's a disconnect between the Raiminess and just having the name Sam Raimi on it. You know, you come to expect certain things when you see certain directors' names, and this has moments, but the whole thing doesn't feel like a Sam Raimi movie, which is crazy because if you look at his last movie, it's a freaking Doctor Strange movie in the Marvel Studios system, and it feels like a Sam Raimi movie. And this doesn't feel like a Sam Raimi movie. It feels like he interjected his moments into it, but it was already, I don't know that it was how beholden he was to the script or what, but there's something just missing here. I don't know if he was trying new things or, because there's nothing particularly bad about it. And then there's some like gorgeous shots that don't feel like Sam Raimi. And then there's some hilarious shots that feel very Sam Raimi that are probably not among the best of the movie, but damn it, they have that Sam Raimi style to them. So yeah, it's very middling, and kind of a disappointment, because this thing has got, I mean, if you just look at it on paper, Sam Raimi, Danny Elfman, Bill Pope, Rachel McAdams, Dylan O'Brien, this movie on paper is damn near perfect. And then the experience is just not quite the same. So yeah, I'm right there with you guys. It's a three for me on direction.
Y'all, we are fucking Voltroning tonight. Or I guess better, Megazording with the hat. We are Megazord.
Yeah, outside of that,
Megazord.
Outside of that one time you guys bullied me down in story, like, this has been.
No, we bullied you down into the same. So we more, yeah, Megazorded.
Exactly.
You're now, yeah, a better foot/arm.
You gotta fit in this box.
Slipped the power.
Come be our penis, Sean.
Before we end out with entertainment value, I have this one note that I think I need to mention here. Sean mentioned it one time when her scalp gets pulled. And it's like, it pulls out and it shows that and it's violent and that's cool. But it was like Looney Tunes hair. Did it, like, that just went away? Right?
Yeah.
Am I crazy?
From then on, no more scalping.
It was, they just lost it. It was fine. Her skin was completely fine. Yep. Like Looney Tunes style. Okay.
Yep. I think it was a glad we were all an editing all mistake. That. They just forgot about it. After the one, like,
it's
little
because
pull.
They did it in CG. If it would have been like a physical thing, they could have redone it every time.
I bet you it was more than just CG. I bet you it was a reshoot because the movie wasn't like fucking edgy enough or like
bloody
doing fight
enough. Very possibly. Very possibly.
Could have been.
And that's why it just, yeah, it totally Looney Tunes away. So, okay. Mm-hmm.
That's a good note.
I didn't know where I was going
to
knock that.
This whole movie
out
has a same cartoonishness to it, so.
It does.
Which, again, a lot of Raimi movies do, but there's, yeah, just something about the bulk tone of a lot of this that doesn't gel with the cartooniness. And I don't know what it is. There's just some disconnect. I can't finger it.
I can't decide if it wants to be cartoony or if it wants to be serious. Can't
finger.
So it's trying to do both. And that's hard to do.
It is. Uh-huh. But you know what? I appreciate Raimi for trying, which is why he will get 3 from literally all of us. With that, we are going to move on to entertainment value, which will cover the enjoyability, success, and reception. And I'm just going to go ahead and kick this off to Bri Guy, because he's going to give us usually the breakdown of all of the scores and how this was like.
Let me give you some stats.
Stat me up, daddy.
92% critical on Rotten Tomatoes, which is crazy.
92%
to me.
Critic?
92 critical.
Because they are all like 6.5. It's 97 6.5s.
Oh, fuck.
Yeah, and it's 86% audience. And then you go into IMDb, it's a 6.8. Metacritic, it's a 75. And Letterboxd, it's a 3.4. So they're all pretty lockstep at like just barely liking it, which is enough on Rotten Tomatoes for it to be, you know, a huge number. This movie only cost $40 million. And that's nuts to me, because this movie looks like it cost more than $40
million. To be fair, half the movies that we watch, when it said this movie had a budget of an SNL skit.
Right.
Like, what the fuck?
What is that?
What,
mean?
From one of those actors?
Can we
like,
get the
come on?
Can we get the salaries for Rachel McAdams and Dylan O'Brien? Like, how much did they get paid for it acting wise?
Oh, that's a good question.
Honestly, I don't see this as a $40 million movie. From what I see on screen, I actually see this as a $20 million movie done really smartly by Sam Raimi, who knows how to run a budget and a tight ship. I don't see a lot of money on the screen. Outside, I think it looks nice. I think it's shot nice. I think it is a few limited spaces. And they're wild spaces, which are usually a lot easier to lock down than like cities or buildings or public, like actual spaces. And then there's the CG and issues. I don't know. I'm kind of surprised that it's $40 million, to be honest.
Okay.
I think that's I'm surprised. It's all right. How much did Pizza Movie cost? Because
that's Pizza what we said was an SNL skit.
It was an SNL skit.
Right?
What does that even mean?
Which is actually nice like, surprisingly guys. High.
The Nice Guys was a $50 million movie.
Yeah, that this is $10 million less than The Nice Guys is mind-blowing to me. Because The Nice Guys had so many practical effects, like fucking cars from the time, running into fucking buildings, and like the actors and so many extras, and like so many different locations and buildings that they had to pay for scenes and sets on. Like, that's
Ryan
a movie
Gosling
that goes to
million.
So many. And Ryan Gosling and Russell Crowe. Yeah.
Ryan Gosling.
I would argue probably either one of those outranked Dylan O'Brien by large sums.
Oh, yeah. Dylan O'Brien's not pulling a big paycheck by any means.
Rachel McAdams is the one that pulls. So I'm a little surprised.
But then you spring for Bill Pope and Danny Elfman. And
Danny Elfman got fucking overpaid.
For sure. I agree.
This could have gone to Bear McCreary at this point, and it would have been fine.
Could have been a McG.
McG does soundtracks.
Oh, wait.
No,
he's a director. He's a director. No. I think he started as he did music videos at first. Yeah. So I must
you
have
can tell.
Associated that
Charlie's
with music
Angels
somehow.
Is an hour-long music video.
This ended up grossing worldwide $94 million. So it almost doubled, or more than doubled. It did 235%, which is decent return.
It made profit.
And yeah, your critics overwhelmingly liked it, but maybe not loved it. One of my favorite reviews, I found someone Letterboxd made me laugh quite a bit. That was probably my favorite was, "Someone help! Rachel McAdams saved my life and nursed me back to health, and now I'm trapped on an island and she won't let me leave because she wants to live a little island life together. My steak is too juicy and my lobster's too buttery.
This is
two lemon squirt squirty.
Exactly.
This guy gets it.
That's our new thing.
Like I said earlier, on paper, this thing sings, but something about actually watching it when it was over, I was disappointed. I was like, man, like while it's on, there's fun parts and I'm laughing, I'm enjoying it. There's parts I'm going like, was that necessary? Oh, that was too much. Do we need all that boar snot, that CG boar snot? Maybe not that much. And at the end, I wanted it to be better. I hoped it was going to be better. But I think it's a 3 for me. And I'll send it over to Ryan.
I'm really glad you did, because I've spoken a lot tonight, and I don't need to now. Everything you said was dead on the money. It's a 3 for me. I echo everything 100%. Kyle.
I'm going to give mine visually. So here's the start of the movie. We're at 5, then we're at 4, then we're at 3, then we're at 2. We bump up 3, then we're back to 2 for the end of the movie. 2.
I enjoyed that.
Shiny that felt boy. Like an accurate, yeah.
I enjoyed that. That really did help me actually get to where I was going, because I was going to do something similar. But also, I do just want to chime in. Like, I literally do not know where $40 million went. Like,
I've been trying to read about it. No idea.
Like, I have no idea. And maybe this is just because we do this every week, and depending on what year it is, like, the budget, like, I am so far away on what the budget is every time I watch a movie. Like, something that I think is out of this world, like, this is insane, has an incredibly low budget. And then I watch this, I'm like, $40 million? Did they spend 30 on cocaine? Like, what the fuck? But I'm going to say, much like Kyle's, started high. And then it just, like, the further that it went on, it just started creeping down a little bit. And ultimately, like, if it ended 20 minutes sooner, it would have been at, like, I don't know, it would have been at a 4. If it had a different ending, it would be at a 4. But unfortunately, both of those things are in there, and it's at a 3. Because, yeah, like, the ending, it's just, looking back, it's a much more enjoyable experience when the last thing that isn't sitting with you is the end of a movie, and you can look at it as a whole instead of what you immediately just tasted. So it was a more enjoyable movie looking back than it was when it finished.
Mm-hmm.
Which is that's a weird thing to reckon with. But yeah, that's where I'm at. And I think I round this out, so.
The rare occurrences where, like, watching the movie was more fun than going back and remembering it.
Yeah. Oh. Yep. So, yeah. I round this out.
So, with that, Brian, what is our total for the movie?
We gave Send Help a 59.
Ooh, that's kind of low.
That is a little low.
I would say if I had to rate it, it's like a 7 out of 10 for me, maybe. Maybe a 6. I don't know. The more I talk
about it, I'm somewhere between a 6 and a 7.
Probably a 6 for sure. Maybe a 5.
I'd probably call it like a 65.
I'm actually a 5.
Yeah, I was like, Kyle, I think you're much lower.
I'm a 5. Yeah.
You sound like more of a 5 on this one.
And 5 feels right for me. Like,
it's fair.
This is Go on.
I'm surprised. I thought I was going to come in here maybe the most negative on it. Seeing that it had, like, in the 90s on Rotten Tomatoes, it tricked me for a moment, too. And I was like, okay, so apparently I'm going to be in the minority. I'm going to come in here with a bunch of nitpicks and just be, like, that fucking person on the podcast. And it kind of surprised me that we are pretty much all there in the same kind of middle on this one. That really speaks to how bullshit Rotten Tomatoes is.
Yeah, it does.
I think it's not even just Rotten Tomatoes, but really what gets me about this is
So I didn't see any trailers. I planned on seeing it. I didn't see it. Saw Iron Lung, notably, famously, as I mentioned earlier. It's very famous. Most famous ever. So anyways, in between having not seen it famously and renting it, like I rented it at home. Like we had a, you know, a movie night and it's like, I was going to pay this much to go to theaters anyways. We have a big screen. We'll watch it on here. In between that, the amount of people that are like, oh, have you seen this yet? Have you seen this yet? And, you know, I'm like, no deets, but like, go see it. The amount of people that were just gushing about this. And then once it finished and I'm like, I don't trust any of you about anything anymore. Like, I'm not the person you talk to about movies. Why are you telling me to, I don't know.
You're going to need to send help if they recommend you anything else.
Yeah. Punch him in the wiener after drugging him with an octopussy.
It's the rat. Punch him in the rat.
We're going to find out Sean Connery did that when he was 007. Just octopussied a bunch of interns. Staff.
He is pretty problematic, so.
It's a verb.
It would James Bond, not Sean Connery.
Octopussied.
Well, thanks as always to you guys for taking the time to watch this movie. I am sorry it's not what I even wanted it to be, and it is just a middling Raimi, which is what it is. But I also want to thank you listeners for tuning in. But before we wrap up, we need to find out what we're talking about next week.
We do, which is, and I flirted with it. I mentioned a short little anime called Cat Soup, which is still on the table, but I do have a choice for you boys.
Did you change your mind
today? No. And I would still love to do Cat Soup, but that's why I'm putting it to you boys, though, because I do have this other idea for a weird one that's not a movie-based thing, technically, because it could be anything. I would like to know what your top three favorite movie quotes are, and why, of course.
How would it not be a movie thing?
I know. Well, I was also thinking TV, because I didn't want it to be quotes in general. I came back after I said that, because then you're just going to be like, I don't know, the Emancipation Proclamation.
Do like top
four-score
quotes.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. Like, you know, just general. Like, that would encompass everything that we would generally discuss on the show. So like comic books of the nature. That's my other one. And if we don't do it next week, look for it coming soon, because I've been wanting to do that for a while.
If not, that'd be a great Patreon. We could easily do like two of those Patreon.
Okay. Well, then fuck you. So it's Cat Soup next week. Cat Soup.
Thanks for letting me know my thing was dog shit.
It's a 30-minute surreal ass anime dealing with life, death, all of the above in 30 minutes through the eyes of a cat. It is one of the weirdest things I've seen. And I haven't seen it for a long time. It was one of those, a buddy had it and showed it to me one time when we were smoking weed in his basement, and it stuck with me for a long time. So, but it's free online, and very curious to get into Cat Soup and talk about it with somebody besides my burnout stoner friend from 20 years ago. It should be interesting. So, meow indeed. I look forward to that, gentlemen. And Ryan, take us out. Tell them listeners what they can do.
Well, before we do that, Sean.
Oh, yeah. He's got plugs.
Yeah.
Give us money.
Plug us up.
Patreon.com/experiencegrind. Go to our website. Click the links.
Yeah. Experiencegrind.com. Click on the Patreon thing. Give us money. You'll get bonus episodes every week, pretty much. We talked about a lot in today's. I don't remember any of it, even though we have referenced it. 100 it's a lot squishy, of food stuff. Or something like that.
If you want to know what lemon squirt squirt on my lobster balls is about.
Yeah.
Lobster and nuggets, also, damn.
And how do you feel about eclairs? Are they fancy? Or are they not? I don't know. Tune in on Friday and find out what a certain somebody thinks. Yeah. Also from there, you can find our Discord link. Comment in, chill. But Ryan, back to you.
Give us money.
So, listeners, go help all yourself.
Yeah.
Y'all, we...
Yeah.
That's what this is. We're selling and marketing Zoom meeting.
100%.
Thanks for joining us for another Experience Grind podcast, the show where we talk about movies, games, and pop... Not going to do that one.
That's my favorite.
All right. Hello, and thanks for joining us, Frank.
what are we doing here, Kyle? All right.
Hello, and thanks for... God damn it. That's my fault. I'm sorry. All right. Oh, I hate this. I'm in my head. Don't give a shit.
You don't hate it as much as future Sean will hate it when he's trying to find where the episode starts.
Hey, Sean, use this one right here. Got it covered.